And so, did you just want me to say dispatches from the underground? Dispatches from the underground.
Dispatches from the underground.
With your host,
Joey Steele. Up to no good. We're good?
Question authority.
Dispatches from the underground.
Question everything.
Dispatches from the underground!
All right, welcome to Dispatches from the Underground. I'm your host, Joey Steele. Thanks for getting down with us. We are coming at you from the underground in New York City. That's what we are. This is what we do. I'm glad you could join us down here. It is a glorious fucking day here in New York City. It is beautiful outside. We're finally able to get out and enjoy the weather a little bit with masks on and in appropriate ways and so on and so on. But the quarantine is being lifted slowly a little bit at a time. People are being considerate for the most part. I think for the most part, people are being pretty thoughtful and considerate. It, which is, I think, a nice byproduct of this moment that we're living in. And it's just fucking nice. It's just so nice to be able to come to the studio finally and able to record a podcast. It's been so long. I apologize about that. We're going to talk about that a little bit more in a minute, but it is fucking great. Now, I hope everybody else out there is positive. I know it's been a difficult time. I know there's been horrible losses and people have endured just the most unbelievable, almost unthinkable challenges in this period. But there is so much to be excited about. I will give you a little example, as I'm sure people are wondering what the fuck I'm talking about, as we are stricken with a horrible illness and the quarantines are being imposed in other places. By the way, if you do have a quarantine being imposed on you, you should go back and listen to the last couple episodes of Dispatches. We have been dealing with the quarantine here in New York City for quite a while, and that isolation can be difficult. The issues that come up with it can be challenging, and it's just sort of difficult to deal with. So we put together a series of a few episodes talking to folks while they're in quarantine all across the world with the things and the thoughts that they're dealing with. And we just sort of walk through that isolation mentality and how to get through it. And I think we have some great reflections. So please go back and listen to those episodes, the last few episodes of Dispatches from the Underground. We're not going to be talking about the quarantine on this episode, but I do want to start off by trying to get our perspective a little better, because I know some people are bummed out and people might be asking why I'm so fucking excited about what's happening in the world. And I'll give you an example, because that's what I said I was going to do. So we just had July 4th. We just passed it. I know we don't want to talk about that fucking holiday because we already got through it. We already got through those disgusting flags being flaunted in our face and the horrible history of this country being touted like some brave and noble cause. When we all know, at least the people listening to this podcast, that it's not a brave and noble cause. In fact, it might be a completely failed experiment. But I will say, this July 4th, unlike the rest we have had to endure, at least for me, I felt like my social media pages and news feeds were filled with content of people criticizing the United States instead of touting it. I feel like there was a lot of people burning flags and talking about how the history of this country is something not to be proud of. I don't know. For me, it was the first time that I felt, or maybe I was just paying attention, or maybe my news feeds have just like whittled themselves down to the things I ever look at and click on and like. But I felt like there was a lot more sentiment of anti-Americanism, or at least like American, you know, criticizing America rather than this totally ignorant, banal pride that people are constantly shoving in each other's faces here in the United States. It felt pretty good to me. I'm not saying it was wonderful. The holiday is miserable and hard to endure in the first place. But it felt like people were, for the first time, more than promoting the U.S., people were criticizing it. That's what it felt like. I don't know if that's a result of the reflection people have had during COVID, or just the fact that people have been able to do some reflection, or because of this beautiful new wave of anti-police movement that's been going on in the United States. I'm not exactly sure all of what it is. Or maybe it's Trump. I don't know. Maybe it's just people coming to the realization of what America really represents. But I feel like things are changing in front of us. People are becoming more conscious and people are becoming more thoughtful. Maybe it's not as fast as everybody else out there wants, or maybe it's because of the horrible struggles and pains people have been enduring in most recent times. But for whatever the reason is, I'm trying to look at the silver lining of what's happening here. And I do think there is some positive shit to look at. And that is what we are going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about this new incredible wave of anti-police movement that's sweeping across the country. It's important for people to realize this is not a new movement. I know a lot of the mainstream media has whitewashed a lot of history of the anti-police movement and the movement for racial justice here in the United States. And ignored the long tradition of it being against the police and working for justice for the people who are murdered and brutalized by the police every day here in this country. And it's important for people to realize that this is not a brand new movement, but a continuation and a reemergence. I call it a new wave. I don't know what the proper thing exactly to call it is, but we're going to be talking about that here, about the things we saw in the first weeks of protesting here in the United States. Obviously, we don't have correspondents all across the country, and we want to focus on the things that we actually saw here at Dispatchers in the Underground. So we're going to be talking about what I saw personally on the streets protesting here in New York City against the police in support of and for justice for George Floyd, for justice for Breonna Taylor, for all those people who are murdered by the police, for Black Lives, and with millions of people who just poured out into the streets of New York City over the last month or so. So we're going to be talking about what we saw. We're going to be talking about the character of the protest, the makeup, the leadership or lack of leadership or whatever. We're going to be talking about the goods, the bads, the uglies, all these things from our perspective here at Dispatchers from the Underground, from the underground perspective, from a punk perspective. I know that there is a lot of other perspectives out there, and we're not trying to invalidate them. We're not trying to speak over them or nullify them or wipe them away. Please go engage those perspectives. You know, here at Dispatchers from the Underground, the whole point of this show is to be clear about our perspectives. The whole point of us doing this is for us to get down with different perspectives and not just cling to our own, but it's important at the same time that we admit who we are and what perspective we're coming from as we transform that perspective. That's the whole fucking point of this show. That's what we think is so essential to being a punk anywhere in the world, is that we're reflective and conscious and critical and moving and changing. That's so important to us. Yes, here at Dispatchers from the Underground, I'm a white dude. I'm not denying that. I'm not saying that I didn't come from that perspective, that I didn't grow up in that place. But we believe that it's important for us to be moving away from that. The point is to not continue to put out that white perspective and to try and transform who we are to a world of freely associating people. That's not to say that we're there. Pretending that we are is in fact racist, which is the root of people understanding what this All Lives Matter bullshit really represents. That's the whole point of how fucked up it is to think that all lives matter when Black lives have not been given any consideration in this country. Right? It's important for us to understand that we are not in that world of freely associating people, and to get a perspective from wherever we're coming from originally that is trying to get us and people and ourselves and society to a world of freely associating people by making changes in ourselves and our ideology and our communities and all around us. I know there's a lot of folks out there who don't exactly know how to talk about these things because they're uncomfortable with their own perspective. That's fine. Then don't talk about these things. Take time to reflect and listen to other people. And even if you do know how to talk about those things, I am, and I know a lot of other people who are talking, are trying to take as much time as possible and listening. Part of going to these protests was really just observing and listening and looking and thinking through a lot of things and doing a lot of reflection. And I do have some self-criticisms, and I'm going to get into in some episodes to come. That's the point of this show. That's why we think it's important to continue to put out podcasts, and why it's important for people to go and listen to other folks who are not coming from their own perspective to challenge theirs. That's what we've been doing here in Dispatches. That's what we're going to continue to do. That's what we think this show is important, by getting down and understanding those perspectives and continuing to put out radical punk content that really searches through and combs through those perspectives. I know I said that word a lot. I'm sorry. I know that's an important word for us here at Dispatches, perspectives. It's so important because anybody who's making media has a responsibility to understand where they're coming from and to be open and honest about where they're coming from, so we can be conscious and changing and encouraging those who are listening to that media to think through and critically, even if they don't agree with us. Hopefully they do in some ways. But whether they agree with us or not, people can be conscious and critical and change their own ideology as we work through that stuff. That's the problem with the mainstream media. That's one of the reasons we started Dispatches from the Underground, because the media and the mainstream isn't conscious and credible about the perspective they're putting forward, and they're constantly putting out, for lack of a better term, propaganda that isn't conscious and critical and isn't encouraging people to be reflective, whether they agree or not. At least admit where you're coming from. Anyway, on the first part of the episode, we're going to be talking about our perspectives. Oh, I know, no one wants me to say the fucking word anymore. I can't help but say it. I don't know what else to say. I'll try to say outlook more so people aren't frustrated with me saying that word. We're going to be talking about what we saw at the protest, and we're going to be talking about a basic outlook or orientation that we need to have to those protests in case people are unsure exactly how to relate to them. We're going to be talking about that, and then we're going to talk about what we saw. So people... You know, I know there's been a lot of questions about what's been happening at the protests because some people haven't felt comfortable to go out. Maybe there hasn't been protests where you are, or maybe you're in another country and just want to know what's been going on. And we felt it was important to do our first podcast following this quarantine, talking about this anti-police, this new wave of anti-police movement, this new wave of racial justice sort of come to fruition here in the United States. We felt it was important for us to first start off, before we get to some of the heavy issues that are involved in all of these things, we wanted to talk about just what it looked like. Because the coverage has been so biased, we wanted to give people a source of information that we hope that people can trust, which is hopefully Dispatches from the Underground, and hopefully us coming from this perspective of trying to transform our outlook into one of communists, which, you know, that's what I am. I'm not just a white dude covering these things. I struggle to have a perspective of a communist. I struggle to have a perspective of a radical leftist. And I'll say a not traditional communist. I'm not part of any party. I'm not part of any group. I know some of the people who I look up to in the world and history would not consider me a communist because I'm not part of a party, but I'm not part of a party. I'm not part of any group. A lot of those people who are in those parties would consider me an anarchist. So I'm a little bit stuck in limbo and who I am and how people would identify the ideology that we represent here at Dispatch Underground. But we don't give a fuck because we're just representing what we think is an ideology that does represent us getting to that world of freely associating people as much as we can from this wretched society that we live in. Anyway, hopefully that wasn't too confusing. Hopefully I didn't say perspective too much and turn people off. I will minimize the times we talk about that on the rest of the show, but we do feel it's important to be open and honest about where we're coming from here at Dispatches from the Underground, and that's a huge flaw in how media represents itself in other areas. So we want to be open and honest about where we're coming from, where we're trying to get to, our bias, and where what our thinking is. And also we want to make sure that it's important that people know that we are not trying to drown out other people's thoughts on the protests. And I'm sure that they're different from what we're going to say. So, you know, they're totally valid, totally, totally valuable. And I'm sure very thoughtful. We're just going to be giving it to you straight on how we saw it. So that's what we're going to be talking about here on the episode today. Then at the end of today's episode, we're going to be talking about the next steps. First of all, we're going to talk about what we can do and what we should be doing in this moment as punks, as people of conscience, as people struggling to get to that better world we're constantly talking about. We're going to be talking about what to do right now, and we're also going to be talking about what's going to be coming up on Dispatches from the Underground, because there's a lot of other stuff related to this anti-police movement, this new wave of racial justice that has emerged following the murders of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. We're going to be talking about the things that are coming up here on Dispatches and some of the other more philosophical elements that we want to be getting into in the next few weeks and months and so on. And look, this issue is super important to us. I have personally been involved in the anti-police movement in different ways for about 20 years. It is, I think, an essential issue for us to really get with here in the United States because it is so intrinsically involved in the movement for racial justice, the movement for justice in general, and it's just essential. And I'm just so proud of what's been going on and what's been happening here and this new wave that has emerged. And so we're going to be spending some time getting down with it, talking about the ins and outs, talking about the important details, and we're going to talk about that at the end of the episode today. So make sure you stick around to the end of the episode. But first, let's get to the rest of this episode. We're going to start this episode off with a tune. This is a tune from from a band in Pittsburgh called Killer of Sheep. They're an incredible hardcore band, just the best of the best. Absolutely, if you do not own their music, go to their Bandcamp page and immediately get it, because it's fucking top of the line hardcore. Just absolutely brutal, incredible, well played, amazing musicians, all made by the best people in the world. They're such wonderful human beings. I've enjoyed playing with them. I've been lucky enough to have played with them a few times. And in fact, last year at Punk Island, they came over from Pittsburgh and played on our stage, Dispatchers from the Underground stage, and it was our honor to have them. We absolutely adore this band. In fact, all of the bands that I play on today's episodes are bands that we have played on Dispatches in the past. There are bands that I have personally had the privilege of playing with myself, whether it be in my band All Torn Up, Cop Out, or Skullcaster. I have played with all of the bands that I'm going to be playing on today's episode. There are bands who are conscious and critical, and I'm just so in love with all of these bands. So we're going to start off with Killer of Sheep from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Here they are, Killer of Sheep. Get down. There's a lot of people out there who are a little bit confused about how to relate to the protests that have been going on here in the United States. Maybe they're a little confused about how they relate to Black Lives Matter, or how they relate to this new wave of racial justice in general, or how they relate to this new wave of anti-police movement. Maybe they've never really been anti-police. Maybe they're not really sure, like, if that's them, or if they support something like that. I know that those people are probably not listening to this podcast. I can't imagine that there's a ton of people who are confused about how to relate to those things or tuning into Dispatches from the Underground. But I'm sure that there's a lot of people we know who are like that. So I want to start off talking about these things by talking about a basic orientation I think people need to help other people get down with when they talk about these protests and when they're getting into really looking at what's been going on in the streets. There's a lot of people out there who are confused about who they are or what they represent or what they stand for and so on. So it's important that we first come from a basic orientation. I know people are sick of me saying the word perspective, but a simple perspective into how we approach these protests. It is a basic orientation that we need to have, that it is right to rebel against unjust oppression. People rising up against oppression don't have the luxury of analyzing it abstractly. They're filled with fucking passion and moved by the moment. They don't have a chance to sit in an armchair off to the side and analyze the particularities of all the intricacies of every act that they're doing to resist that oppression. So people who are coming at this from a place of criticism, they're saying, oh, I don't support people burning down the police precinct, or I don't support looting, or I don't support people who are using violence against the police or vandalizing city property or property in general. Fuck all of those people. Fuck you. Fuck your armchair. Fuck your privilege, or whatever word you want to call it, sitting off to the side, not really appreciating what people are doing and what they're dealing with. People don't resist oppression in the abstract. They're in the real fucking world dealing with real fucking problems, and they aren't able to just abstractly come at this from a simply and purely intellectual activity. This is real to folks. This is something that is dire to them, that they have been forced to endure, and whatever they fucking do to resist that oppression is right. Righteous. And that is the only goddamn thing that needs to come out of people's mouths in the first fucking place. And for those of us, I'm sure everybody is basically in line with that who's listening to this podcast, but there's a lot of folks who we know in social media or in the real world or wherever who are coming at this from a different perspective. And we need to help them understand this, because things aren't going to stop here. There's going to be more, there's going to be continued resistance, and it's not going to always happen in ways that we're happy about or that we completely support everything that they're doing. But it's a basic orientation that we should be happy about anybody who's doing anything to resist unjust oppression. It's important that we have this basic perspective. It's important that we confront folks who are saying things that are different from this. Hey, look, I know as punks we're supposed to be jaded and cynical, but it's so difficult to be jaded and cynical when people are burning down police precincts, right? I mean, people are standing up and risking their health and well-being for justice, for racial justice, for justice to stop police brutality and murder, and it's just so fucking inspiring. So it's important that people have a basic orientation to all of this. And if you're confused, or if you know people who are confused, cut to the core of it. Don't let them get bogged down in some of the particularities, or some white liberal standing off to the side, or maybe even at the protest. I don't know. Maybe they're there criticizing what's going on. Sure, people can have criticism. People can have their voices. People can talk about these things. That's fine. But it needs to be secondary, tertiary, fourth of area, whatever that's fucking called. The first and foremost, we all need to be expressing our support for these movements of justice. And that needs to be deeply rooted in who we are and how we come at things. And you could talk about your issues with things, but you got to be coming at it from the right place first and foremost. Because if you're not, you just slowly creep into the other side, right? Your secondary criticisms slowly creep into primary criticisms, and then one day you're standing there with a Blue Lives Matter flag. Okay, so it's important people coming at this from a basic orientation, a basic perspective, that it's right for people to resist oppression. It's right for people to stand up and fight for change. And I just want to say on a personal note that seeing the pictures of that police precinct burning was one of the most inspiring, moving moments of my life. I regretted not being there. I regretted not doing that. I think it's just so powerful that people have moved to that place. I'm so inspired by the resistance and the courage that people have taken up to do these things. And we're going to be talking about some of the things that we saw here in New York City. But we're living in this very special moment. it's easy for me because I'm just so proud of this moment. I'm so proud of people out there rebelling. I'm so encouraged and inspired by everybody doing everything that they are doing to resist this oppression. Or maybe it's because I have this orientation that I am moved by this moment. But when they burned down that police precinct in Minneapolis, I was almost moved to tears. I feel like that was like the height of resistance in the modern era. I was so encouraged by it. I mean, I was involved in the protests in Cincinnati in 99 when, after following the murder of Timothy Thomas and his courageous mother speaking out against the police, someone actually shot a shotgun at the police precinct that this was coming from. And I was so inspired by that. I was like, oh shit, someone fucking shot a shotgun at the police. This is amazing. I love this shit. This is incredible. People are actually fighting back against this very real world oppression. And then they burned down a fucking police precinct in Minneapolis. Oh, those pictures were incredible. I'm so proud of folks fighting back. And I know that there are people out there who don't agree with me. Hopefully there's some listening to this podcast. And I'm sure that there are important and valuable thoughts that they have on this issue. But it is important that you are able to see that those criticisms are secondary or tertiary, whatever. That the most important thing is that people are resisting that unjust oppression. Those unjust, racist, fucked up laws that exploit and oppress black people in this country, that prey on poverty and force it on black people everywhere. It's important that people support these protests, that they support people rising up, that they support people resisting injustice. Because if you come at it from any other orientation, it's just you trying to control someone else. This is not about you controlling someone else. This is about empowerment. And when people have been oppressed, they have the right to rebel. They have the right to rebel against those things. It is basic. It is a basic principle and perspective that we all need to have. And if you come at it from another place, you're essentially saying that oppression isn't so bad, right? Those are really the only two options you have. It's right to rebel or it's right to oppress. I don't see a whole lot of other places to come from, right? You have to pick one of those orientations. One of those two things is the basic place you're coming from. And anything else, maybe it's complicated. That's fine. Sure, it is complicated. And we all have lots of things to say and talk about and how we want things to change. But ultimately, there's only two basic outlooks. I know it's not actually that black and white in the real world, but it is that black and white when we're dealing with situations of oppression and empowerment. It is that simple. Because you can talk about the complexities and the particularities and the nuances all day and night, but when it comes down to it, you are either for people rising up or you're for this system oppressing people. There's not a whole lot of room for nuance in the basic outlook that you're coming at this shit from. And if you get bogged down in the nuances of these things, and sure, the nuances are important, but if you get bogged down in them, if you get lost in them, then you lose sight of the people and the fucking moment. You lose sight of the fact that people who are struggling, people who are fighting for power, people who have been oppressed and who are rising up and taking that back, they can't get lost in the nuance of it because they're getting bogged down in the actual reality of the fucking moment. And you might have the luxury and the privilege of standing off to the side and looking at the particularities, but fuck you and your privilege and your luxury and all that nonsense. You need to put your body and your heart and your mind into the fight. And you got to stand on one side or the other. And if you're on the right side, I feel like there's room for you to talk about the nuances and particularities, but not if you're not coming at it from the right basic orientation. Then you're on the wrong side and fuck you. You're with the pigs as far as anyone else is concerned, as far as I'm considered. Anyway, I just think I hope that wasn't too much. I just think it's important for us, before we talk about the particularities of things we saw on the streets, for to make clear how we need to all be looking at these protests. It's right to rebel. And even if there are some things that I didn't agree with that I saw in the streets, although there wasn't, I'm going to talk about that right now, I don't really give a fuck about that. I mean, ultimately, I support people rising up and fighting back, even in ways that I don't agree with, even in fighting back in ways that I don't condone and that don't reflect something that I personally agree with, because anybody who has to deal with oppression has the right to rebel against that unjust oppression. Anyway, that segment went a little bit longer than I thought it was going to, so we're going to take a little break here. We're going to listen to another tune. This is a tune from a band here in New York City featuring an incredible human being who I am lucky enough to call dear friend, my good friend Flora. She's an amazing musician. She's an incredible, inspiring figure, absolutely tough as nails, and she's talented as no other, and I am so lucky to have been able to play with her a few times, and hopefully we'll be playing with her band Ma'afa more in the very near future. She's also in another band called 1865. I should say that Cello from All Torn Up is absolutely in love with 1865, so shout out to 1865. But we're going to be listening to Ma'afa. I think this is a great band. I think if you haven't had a chance to see Ma'afa live, if they're coming to a town here, you hopefully they're going to be doing more touring in the near future. They are spectacular in their live performance, and Flora is always on fucking fire when she performs, not only in the songs, she's an amazing vocalist and musician, but she also is on fire in everything she does and says. So here is Ma'afa from New York City. Get down.
You tag on to my face, my magic is sacred, I will refuse. Not for your seduction on this player despair. Respect my autonomy, don't touch my hair. Make no joke with me, what's below my waist. Not so exotic, not so erratic. Trapped in your violence, I want out of this cage. Not so exotic, not so erratic, yeah. A queen of darkness, a sassy black girl with an attitude. Forgive misogynistic, sexist, violent, racist, fetish, but still true. It's pathological, it's predatory, caging us like animals. When was you? Make no trophy of me, or what's below my waist. Not your anxiety, not your neurotic. Shining your violence, I went out of this cage. Not your anxiety, not your neurotic, you.
All right, let's talk a little bit about what happened at the protests here in New York City. These are protests that started really toward the end of May and spilled over into early June. They were absolutely fucking huge. They were a constant presence in the streets of New York City. They still are a constant presence in the streets of New York City. I have to admit, I have not been to the protests in a few weeks. I'll talk about more at the end of the episode, but I was in an accident and seriously injured my leg and have not been able to walk, let alone go to a protest. But we were at protests constantly day and night for a few weeks here in New York City. And I want to talk about just some of the things that we saw at those protests. Let's talk about the makeup. In my experience, I went to protests solely in Manhattan and Brooklyn and Queens. I did go to a little bit of protests in Queens, but mostly in Manhattan and Brooklyn. I first started out going to the protests in Manhattan. But in New York City, a lot of protests sort of initiate in Manhattan. It's kind of the central borough. It's the place that's easiest to get to on the subways. So that's where I went to a lot of the protests, at least in the beginning. The protests were fucking huge. It was massive from the start, from my first started going to the protests. They were absolutely massive. You could not see the beginning. You could not see the end. And the makeup of the protests was different in different areas and different boroughs. Obviously, it was in again, this is my personal subjective outlook of what I saw. I know I accidentally used the word perspective again. I apologize. But this is just what I personally saw. I didn't take any polls when I was out there. I didn't do any statistical analysis. Given the other absolutely huge protests I've been to in the last 20 years, this was absolutely, without a doubt, for me personally, the most racially diverse, large protest I've ever been to. It was almost completely young people. There was very, very few older folks at the protests. Although there was a lot of older folks along the sidelines in the different apartments and houses that we passed along the protests, a lot of people would be older coming out and supporting, banging pots and holding signs and stuff. But the protesters were almost completely younger folks. And I want to say that almost everybody at the protest was wearing a mask. I think I did a tally one time. I think I posted it on a Facebook post somewhere, and I counted the actual number of people I saw who were not wearing masks. I think it was like 6 or 7, right? There was like 6 or 7 people who I saw not wearing masks. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people that I saw protesting, and there were probably millions and millions of people protesting over the weeks that I was out there. And I saw like 3 or, like a few people here, a few people there. I think a total of 6 at the time I actually sat down and walked through in my mind the number of people who were not wearing masks. And it was usually for a particular reason. Like, I remember there was one guy, no offense to the guy, he looked like an ogre. I mean, he was absolutely massive, and he was drumming the entire time. He was actually not yelling. You know, it was more important that people were wearing masks out there, because everybody was on the streets yelling out, and there was spittle coming out. The spittle comes out when people yell. There's particles. I guess particles is the word we're using to sound more sophisticated. Particles emerge from the mouth when people open it and yell out words. But everyone was masked almost completely. I will say, at the few of the vigils and stuff, there was an older crowd presence. I remember that there was a vigil that I went to. It was actually the vigil for George Floyd that was held in Cadman Plaza. The mayor actually spoke it at one point. When the mayor of New York City spoke at the vigil, the entire crowd booed and turned its back on the mayor. It was pretty righteous, especially the fact that most people couldn't even see what was happening. So there was like a slow wave of everyone saying, "Oh, it's the mayor," and they turned their backs. It was pretty righteous, pretty funny to see. Anyway, at that vigil, and there was a couple of vigils that I went to that were more somber in tone, there was a little bit more of an older folks out there. It wasn't exclusively young people, but the vast majority of people that I saw there were young. I would say anywhere between like 15 and 35. I think that was the median age, probably. Again, didn't do polls, but that really felt like a thrust of the age group. I also want to mention this was probably one of the best dressed protests I've ever been to. I know this is not like the main thing to talk about or whatever. People were wearing the nicest outfits. I guess I'm just used to leftist outfits, and I guess I'm just used to like punk outfits. But people were wearing like very hip things, like fucking, I don't know, maybe because they haven't been able to go outside in so long. I feel like they were wearing some of the nicest outfits they had, and very revealing clothing. I guess, I don't know, maybe it's just that this issue in this moment is attracting people who have better style. I'm not exactly sure why I felt this way. Maybe it was because I've been cooped up so long and wearing fucking the same shorts and t-shirt for months on end that maybe I was just noticing it. I don't know. It's hard to say. But the makeup of the protest, I thought, was particular. Extremely young, extremely considerate folks wearing masks. Everyone, there was a concern about the masks. People were handing them out. People were talking to each other. If someone had pulled down their mask, someone would kindly, politely talk to them about wearing it. And it was very considerate, supremely considerate, I would say. There was a very conscious element that we could get sick. I think, actually, a lot of us appreciated the fact that we would get sick going to these protests, because we were all sort of standing next to each other yelling. Even with masks on, while we were yelling, we're all still yelling in the streets next to each other. And, social distancing, people were trying to do it, but at times it wasn't possible. We were boxed in, we were crushed in, we were forced in tight spaces. And I think over the weeks, it relaxed a little bit, but the masks didn't. People still really were wearing that and clinging to that element. So very considerate, very brave, very courageous, people risking their health and well-being going out there. And a very young protest, very racially diverse. I want to talk about There were dozens of marches every single day. It was endless all over the city. Small splinter marches off of big ones, sporadic, almost random seeming marches. I would leave my house, head to a march, and I would pass by three or four smaller marches on my way. Splinter marches were just constant. You know, we would be marching and then a small group would head off in another direction. And sometimes people didn't know that it was a small group heading off. So there would be a huge crowd that would follow them. It was pretty wild. Back in the day, like when we did like IMF, International Monetary Fund or World Bank protests, there would be splinter marches all the time, but they were endlessly talked about and like in collectives and people would plan them and they were very organized. This was not like that. All right, these protests were extremely, extremely organic. There was very little leadership at these protests. And that's what I want to talk about second. In fact, I really don't think that a lot of left-wing leaders could have started something like these protests because they would have wanted it to go, they wanted the message to be controlled or to go in a clear direction. And that's just not what it was. These protests were super organic. They were about empowerment, other than Black Lives Matter and that we needed to stop these cops and justice for Breonna Taylor and George Floyd. I think those were the simple, basic messages. But it wasn't entirely just about a message. It really was about empowerment. It was about a generation of younger folks standing up and taking power back and really like vibing it through the crowd and just sort of representing like, this is who we are. This is our future. This is what we want to look like. This is what we want to do. It was empowering to the max. And I think the fact that there wasn't clear leadership or even a clear, linear, simple message pulsing through the crowd, I think that was all part of it. Let me give some simple ways I'm looking at this. First of all, there was no one initiating the rallies, right? So you couldn't pin down an organization who was calling for this one or this one or this one. In fact, people were messaging me like, hey, how can I find out about these protests? I had tons and tons of people who were hollering at me asking about where these protests were. And there was an Instagram account that started Justice for George Floyd. And that was really like the source of information. It wasn't an organization. It wasn't putting out only things that were related to something that they were calling for. It was just like, I think a person who had taken responsibility to coordinate information about these different events that were happening all around the city. And that became like a hub for what people were finding out about. Let's take another one, masks or resources that were available at the protests. There were people who were handing out masks to anyone who wasn't wearing one or anyone who was in need of one. If you needed a new one, if like your mask's getting funky, and sometimes they would get funky from yelling in them for hours and hours and hours on end. People were walking through the crowds and just handing those things out. They weren't identified with a t-shirt. They weren't identified with a logo or an organization. And it was just people who saw a void in what was needed, saw a need that needed to be fulfilled. And so they stood up and started to get involved by doing that. And I knew a bunch of the people who did it. I don't know a ton of them, but I knew some folks who did end up volunteering in that capacity, and no one asked them. They saw other people doing it and then sort of just got passed into that role. So there was no one organizing those folks as far as I could see. I don't know where the fuck those things came from. Someone was getting those masks. Someone was buying them. Someone was gathering the resources and purchasing them. I don't know who it was. I don't know what the organization was. And again, I'm not saying I'm an expert in these things, but I've been going to protests for a long fucking time, and I think it's pretty clear and obvious when an organization is doing something and when there is no organization doing it. And if an organization or there was a clear leader doing these things, they were not perpetuating their own personal line or agenda. It was really just made up of people who went onto the streets, who were demanding these simple things: justice for George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, stop the police murder and brutality, and Black Lives Matter. There was no one who was curating or cultivating chants, right? Chants were pretty directed in those three things, but there was lots of other ones. And there was tons of different perspectives being shared, radical ones, not so radical ones, very reformist ones. It was all super organic. It really did feel like people had just walked out of their apartments and joined these protests, having had no activist experience before. That's what it felt like. Again, having been to a fucking ton of protests, that is 100% what it felt like. There were good parts of that, and there were less good parts of that. There were some chants that I didn't think were, like, you know, really reflecting the kind of world that I want to get to. People were chanting, NYPD suck my dick. I couldn't get behind that chant. I didn't tell people to stop chanting it, because I think that would have been fucked, going back to what we were talking about earlier. It's not my place to say what people should and shouldn't be doing. That's the sentiment they want to express. Fine. I didn't chant that because I felt like there was a weird misogyny or gender dynamic involved in that. It felt really uncomfortable to me. But there are a lot of people who were inspired by that. So it's fucking, you know, people want to righteously rebel against some bullshit NYPD stuff saying that. Fine. You know, I'm not here to micromanage these fucking chants. And that's the point. There was no one micromanaging these chants. There was just people who were going on the street and chanting things. And I would be in sections of folks with young women or young people of color who had taken up leading these chants. And it was fucking awesome. They didn't have a megaphone. They weren't organized, trained activists. They were just people on the streets who wanted justice and went on the streets and started chanting this shit. And most of the chants weren't NYPD go suck my dick, which is funny and silly or whatever. It's not something it's not a chant that reflects the ideology that I want to be screaming in the street, but people wanted to yell. It was funny, fine, whatever. It was organic. It was amazing. And it was empowering and encouraging to see all these fucking people out there when no one told them to go out there and do it. They just went out there, they started doing it, and they had a fucking great time. And that leads me to another point, which is the energy of the protests. I'm going to get back to leadership in a second, but I want to talk briefly about the energy of these protests. They also were not normal. There were some ebbs and flows. There were some exciting moments and like some really like moving moments where people had brought the energy up, but it wasn't a traditional protest in the sense that there were like contingents. Well, there was a few contingents. Like there was obviously like an international socialist contingent and stuff like that, and they all had their same signs and they would say their chants. But this wasn't made up of organized contingents that I saw for the most part. This was made up of people who would have high energy and low energy and be exhausted and excited, and it would ebb and flow a little bit differently than usual. A lot of these bigger protests, the energy doesn't stay high for very long. Like maybe there's a couple of exciting contingents where people sort of migrate to, but the vast majority of them, like I remember some of the big climate marches here in New York City, it was really an endurance game. It was like older folks who were just like kind of a parade of activism and just slowly like walking through. There was very little chanting, there's very little energy. Unlike these protests, you know, people would get tired, so there were sections of the protest that would sort of like, they would stop chanting for a little bit at a time, a few minutes here, a few minutes there. There wasn't a need to constantly continue chanting, but the energy would always rise up. People would scream and dance and chant, and there was a vibe of positivity that pulsated through the protest, even when the marches would last for hours. I mean, these marches were no fucking joke. We marched all day. And it would go into the night almost every day. We're talking like 6, 7, 8 hours of marching at a time, constantly, day after day. And so keeping that energy high was difficult, but still people did it. It reminded me a little bit of the Republican National Convention here in New York City, which is a time where there was constant protests, or even back in the old IMF days of the late 90s and early 2000s, where people were protesting the IMF and the World Bank and the WTO more regularly. There was a different character, though, to these protests. It was a constance to people being out there and just sort of this mentality of this is a moment of activism, but it was a lot more energetic, I think, a lot. People looked a lot more mainstream than the protests back then. There was like a leftist look back then. Ironically, still people had face masks on because they were like a lot of people were what we call black blocked up, which is wearing all black and covering your face with a mask. But it was a different time where people wore that because they wanted to hide their identity. This time they were wearing it because they wanted to protect themselves from spreading the coronavirus. But there was an element of that. And also, I want to say just along the lines of this energy stuff, there was a lot of people who were spray painting shit with messages against the cops. It was pretty constant throughout the protests. People spray painted, for those who aren't in New York City, people were spray painting monuments. There was spray paint all over the arch in Washington Square Park. It was fucking amazing. And along the marches, people would have spray paint and they would be off to the side spray painting. Back in the day, the WTO protests, there would always be some liberal at these things who would be calling people out when they did something like that and shaming them, telling them that's not what you're supposed to do. Totally different at these protests. People were protecting them. They were looking out for cops. People weren't making a big spectacle of it. People would come by, spray paint some shit, and they would move on. And no one was calling them out. No one was challenging them. No one was telling them to stop or that that's not what these protests are about, unlike what would have happened back in the day. Anyway, so bold moves by people at these protests, bold energy, super deep-rooted, passionate chanting, constantly in the streets chanting. Most of the messages were clearly in support of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, calling for justice for them. And most of the chanting was calling the NYPD out for being the murderous monsters they are. And there was a constant chanting supporting the Black Lives Matter. Those were the mainstays of what was being expressed in the street. It was very clear what was being expressed in the street for the vast majority of people who organically poured into the streets. But let's take a break right now. Let's listen to another tune. We're going to listen to a tune from a band in Philadelphia. This is a band that I have, again, had the privilege of playing with. I think they're a fantastic collective of folks. Truly passionate, truly conscious, truly uplifting, and just enjoyable as all hell. These folks put on an amazing show, and I have loved playing with them when I have had the chance, and enjoy seeing them, hopefully again, in the very near future. Here is Soul Glow from Philadelphia. Get down. I want to say one more thing about the leadership or the lack of leadership. There was no one that I could see, one organization leading these things. I do know some of the organizations who initially called for some of these protests in New York City, PPA, and some other organizations who would call for these things, and they did a great job of initiating some of this stuff. But it seemed to take on a mind of its own, for sure. And I'll give you an example. All right, so me and a friend, we went to the Barclays Center, which is where the big sporting events center in downtown Brooklyn. We went to the Barclays Center, and we were listening to some people speak at a rally in front of the Barclays Center, surrounded by cops, like every protest was. I mean, it was absolute mountain police presence at these protests, an unbelievable, overwhelming presence. And that's not something new. That every time there's an anti-police demonstration, and I've been to anti-police demonstrations where there was 20 of us chanting against the police, and there was hundreds of cops surrounding us. So it's constant that was, I knew that was going to happen, but there was an absolute mountain. It was an army. It really was an army of police surrounding us at the Barclays Center and everywhere else we went to. At one point, we're on the outside of the protest, you know, my friend and I, and this dude, he's got like a speaker on a little dolly that he's, and he's got a microphone, and he turns the speaker on while someone is still talking at the rally, and he says, "Fuck it, let's march." And he just starts marching and we all follow. This is not a dude who was clearly an organizer of this protest. He, to me, just seemed like someone who had a speaker and a dolly who was ready to march. That's what it came across to me. And as we began the march, and we're marching toward the bridges, toward Manhattan, from Barclays Center, and we ended up sort of weaving in and out of some streets and stopping at some precincts as we were walking toward the bridges. But we were headed toward the Manhattan Bridge from the Barclays Center. And at one point, as we're marching, this white dude who has like an official looking vest on, he looks like he's wearing like a, sometimes medics who are at these things, people who are able to give medical care, they'll wear vests that will have something that looks like a Red Cross or something that looks like a medical symbol on his vest. He asks for the microphone from this young black man and this young black woman who are the ones who are pulling the dolly with the speaker on it. That they're basically leading the chants at the front of this march. I'd say on this splinter march, there were thousands and thousands and thousands of people at the Barclays Center. This splinter march, from where we were, which was toward the front of it, we were standing right next to the guy when he started marching. There was maybe 1,000, 2,000 people on the splinter march. Although at this point we were gathering people. These protests were constantly, people were joining constantly. So they were just growing and growing and growing. Anyway, so this guy who was wearing this medical insignia on his vest, he asked for the mic. The guy who was leading the chants kindly and gladly, you could see him, gave him the mic without question. There was no struggle. We could see this happening, although there were a few hundred people in front of us. We didn't know what was being said. Anyway, he gets on the mic and he asks people to stop. So we all stop. And then he basically starts giving a very confusing speech about how we need to not be violent. At that point, this was not a violent protest, right? I saw no violence at all in any of the main protests that were happening, any of the called for protests that were happening. The only violence that I saw at those protests were police unprovokingly attacking us. Okay? I want to be super fucking clear. These protests were entirely fucking peaceful, except for the fact that police were beyond brutal. And I have been victim of police brutality dozens and dozens of times. I have seen police attack protests dozens and dozens of times in the past. And these cops were on another level of geared up and tense and attacking for no reason whatsoever. But these protests were entirely peaceful. And this guy gets up, grabs the microphone, is given the microphone, and starts talking about us. And the protest is basically like, fuck you, like, get out of here. But the guy who is leading, he is not grabbing the microphone back. Although the guy I'm with, shout out to Monty from Race Trader, who I was out there with. He and I were at the protest together. Incredible band, Race Trader, from here in New York City. Fucking phenomenal band. Amazing vocalists, and one of the best shows in political punk. Anyway, Monty runs up to the front and basically like, yo, fuck this dude, take the mic away from him, and pulls the mic out of his hand and gives him back to the guy, and the protest continues. No one was trying to hear this dude. And my point in sharing the story is there was no leadership. No one was stopping this guy from taking the mic. In fact, the guy who was basically leading this section of the protest was willing to let this other dude, this white dude, from nowhere, was wearing this taped on medical symbol on his back, continued to talk. And it was the people at the protest, in fact, Monty and other folks, who stopped him from hijacking the content and kept the march moving. There was no leadership on this march absolutely none. That was a good example of leadership, a lack of leadership. I mean, the march was great. It was super energetic. We were totally organized. I don't know if there was a direction. I don't even know if we were a splinter group or whatever. It didn't really matter. We just wanted to fucking march. People didn't need to have a leader telling them what to do. We just needed some folks to initiate something, and this dude did it. It was totally organic. It was a wonderful leadershipless movement, exciting protest, and above all else, these protests were supremely empowering to everyone who was at it. People felt like they could come out and share their feelings and emotions and be out there and demand justice. And they didn't need someone to tell them where to go, when to go, or how to do it. It was very, very encouraging. Here's a negative example of a lack of leadership, okay? So we're at Cadman Plaza, which is a place where there is regularly protests in New York City. It's in Brooklyn, right over the Brooklyn Bridge, like right at the opening of the Brooklyn Bridge on the Brooklyn side is this big plaza, sort of like the mall in DC, a big sort of empty space. There's a memorial over there. I think it's a World War II one. I don't even know. So there's protests there all the time, and we were on a march that went over to Cadman Plaza, and it was one of the first nights of curfew that this was happening on, and we weren't allowed to be out at that point. I think it was an hour and a half or so after curfew. The curfew was, I think, basically for dark, and we had been marching a couple hours into the night, and there was a huge police presence. And at one point we were completely surrounded by cops. Well, three sides, I think we were surrounded on. I think we could have still ran back out from whence we came, but we were trying to march over the Brooklyn Bridge at this point, which was something that happened a lot in the protests before the curfew was declared. People had been marching over the Brooklyn Bridge and over the bridges into Manhattan. The cops had drawn a line and said, there's no way we're getting on the bridge. Let me say again, no one actually said these things. Cops didn't actually get on and ever give us a dispersal order, which is not usual. I'll talk about that in a minute. Anyway, so the cops had formed a line. They were in riot gear. Their billy clubs were out. There were people who were clearly holding pepper spray, and their masks were down. They were ready to attack us. They were thumping their billy clubs in their hands. It was very intimidating. And they had stopped us from going over the bridge. And we were at the front of this right as we were about to get on the bridge. We were at the very front. Cops were directly in front of me. I could touch them with my hand if I wanted to. We didn't know what to do. We didn't know where we were headed. We didn't know we were going over the bridge at this point. We were just in a march, demanding justice, and we were stopped by the police. Anyway, this guy, this white dude, again, jumped up onto a street sign, climbed up the street sign, and was holding onto the walk signal. And he looked like a fucking rockabilly newsie. He was wearing like a news cap, like a 20s news cap, like a fedora or something with like a card in it. And he was covered in tattoos, and it was a white dude, and he was just, I don't know, he looked like a rockabilly newsie. He looked ridiculous. Anyway, he started shouting at the protest to go in this particular direction. He said, go this way, we can get out that way. And I had been watching with my friend and had seen that there is no fucking way that we were going that way. There was even more cops. In fact, that's the way he was telling us to go was where the buses of police were. And where there's buses of police, there's buses to take away protesters. And I had done a little bit of jail support, so I knew that they were actually arresting people and putting them in those vehicles and transporting them to the jails. So I didn't know if this guy was a provocateur or just a fucking idiot, or if he was working with the cops to try and get us to go toward the vehicles so they didn't have to carry us that direction. I didn't know what he was doing, but he was clearly wildly fucked up. So I'd stop the crowd. Personally, me and my friend, we stopped the crowd and say, do not go that way. There are a ton more cops over there. Then this guy said, well, there's a ton of cops here. And I said, yeah, but there are tons of cops and buses over here. We shouldn't go that way. If we want to go out, we should go out the back way we came. If people want to go out, they can go that way. Do not go the direction that this guy was telling people to go. He got down and left. So I don't know. He was with us for a long time, but there was a lot of undercover cops at these protests. I mean, most of them were clearly identifiable, super easy to identify an undercover cop. A lot of times they're wearing looks like dog tags around their neck, which is where their badges. A lot of times you could see their vests underneath. I mean, they're not usually trying to hide it. Right? People were talking about them wearing different colors of armbands and things like that. Yes, that was true. We did see that, but if it wasn't too, there was also cops not doing that for sure. A lot of the cops I saw in the protests were looking for vandals and were looking for people spray painting, and then they were just pulling them out. Anyway, we're going to talk about cops in a second. So in the chaos, I did see people trying to exert leadership because of the lack of leadership in ways that weren't healthy. You know, we resisted that. And I think there are times that probably that wasn't resisted and some bad things happened. Maybe some people did some things they regret or ended up going someplace they didn't expect to go to. And that's a possibility. It's a plausibility. It makes sense to me. But for the most part, the lack of leadership was overwhelmingly empowering and a wonderful thing. So there was some both to both sides of it. Since we're already talking about these two other white people at a protest, I want to talk about white people at the protests in general. I think for the most part, most white people that I saw were not trying to take leadership. They were making sure that they weren't stepping on toes or starting chants, and they were following the leadership of the black people around them. I think that was pretty universal, at least in the protests that I saw. And I thought that was pretty thoughtful and respectful on every front, on both ways. I think that there was a lot of black people out there who were very respectful and patient with white people who I think that maybe weren't making the best choices. And I think there were a ton of black folks out there who were giving them some space or moving away from them and doing things differently because there was a lot of mutual racial respect out there in a lot of ways. But there was a couple of times and two that I've already talked about, and I'm going to talk about another one here where some white people try to exert leadership. All right. So there's a time. This is when we were at Cadman Plaza and we were surrounded by the police. There was a dude at the protest who was stoked about being confrontational with the police, right? He was jacked. I mean, he was jacked in both ways in the sense that he was a big dude. He was ready to fucking rumble, but he was also jacked in excitement that he was pumped that he could protest the police. So he was getting in the face of cops. He wasn't touching them. And he explained to me that he had gotten out of jail recently and he had nothing. And he was basically just stoked to be at a protest where he could tell the cops to fuck off. You could see it in his eyes. I mean, he never touched the cops, but he wanted to. He was getting in the face of the cops. He was off to the side of the protest. And he wasn't in the mainstream. He wasn't trying to lead anything. He wasn't like trying to get people to fight cops. But he was making it clear he was ready to die on this hill. He didn't care. He was going to get in the face of these pigs. He had single-handedly stopped a car full of lieutenants, white shirts, cops, from moving through the protest. He had single-handedly stopped them. And me and a friend basically helped support him, making sure that he wasn't arrested and got his back. We were just supporting. We were just standing near him. He actually said to us, "Don't worry about it. I got this. I got this." And we weren't in the way. We were just making sure that he was safe. In case they did come out and start attacking him, we were going to do what we could to keep him safe. But he didn't care. He didn't care if he was safe. So he made that clear to us as well. Anyway, two young white women came up and very aggressively told the dude. I think one of them actually poked her finger in his chest that this is not what we were trying to do. Like, it looked like the dude was about to jump on the car and start smashing it. That's what it felt like. He didn't, right? He did not do that. But I thought that might happen. And I was excited about that. But these two white women basically were like, they said to him very aggressively, "This is not what these protests are about. Stay peaceful, remain peaceful." And I got in her way and was like, yo, do not fucking tell him what to do. We don't need any more white people at these protests telling black people what to do. So she backed off. She actually welled up in tears a little bit and backed off. I thought it was very stark to have a white liberal at these protests, white young white woman trying to stop an older black man. The guy was probably 45, 50, you know, a big dude, but 45, 50, a little older. And it was just a stark contrast of this young white woman telling this older black man how to make change for racial justice. She stopped. The whole crowd came over and protected this guy and surrounded these white shirts and made a stand there. But there was some issues of racial tension, and I think that there are a lot of things that white folks really need to think about when they go out to these things, about who they are and what they're doing there. I'm going to talk about the cops for a second. First of all, I want to say that for the vast majority of police who were out there, they were not wearing masks. And this is a time where it was mandatory for people to wear masks. And the fact that they weren't was absolutely outrageous to me. And I think it was really a sign and a symbol of how the city and the cops feel about us. The cops were on edge. There was a ton of them. They were super quick to arrest and to be violent. Cops were actively beating the shit out of people at these protests. We were at this protest where we surrounded this police car and didn't let it move. We were then chased out of this area by the police. Police actually running after all of us. Like they were beating people in the face with mallets, with their batons, and arresting people. And then once the crowd started walking away from that, they started running after us and chasing us down to beat us up and arrest us. So we were running down the street away from the police. The violence on the behalf of the police was just endless, you know, and this was that particular time. There was never an order given for dispersal. I was at protests day in and day out and never heard the police give an order to leave. Right. I mean, there was a curfew that we were violating, which I think was totally unjust and unconstitutional and a lot of other things. It violated our First Amendment rights to freedom of speech to say that we couldn't be protesting at night. It was absolutely insane. There was no reason to do it. But there was never, the police were never issued an order, and they would just start beating and arresting people. And a lot of the arrests that I saw taking place were just people who could be pretty easily picked off. No reasons, people who weren't doing anything. They were just standing there and chanting. Some of them not even chanting. They were just standing there. I think the police were shoving people through the system, just trying to process them to get their information and to intimidate them from going back out to the protest. So that I think a lot of the people who arrested were just mainstream folks who they could pick off and easily arrest and put through the system without the protesters getting in their face. And also, I went to do some jail support, and there was folks who were waiting outside for people to come out. And almost all of the people who were coming out of the jails that night were just people. They weren't activists. They were just folks who looked very mainstream, who had been picked off. And I overheard a lot of them talking, and they said they didn't do anything. They were just walking by, and the police arrested them absolutely for no reason at all. I believe them, and there was no reason for them to be lying to us. We were there to help coordinate their legal services and get them the things they needed in order to get home and be safe. So there was no reason for them to be lying to us. Police were absolutely vicious. I will say there was a time where we were marching through Soho, which is an area of Manhattan, a very, very wealthy area of Manhattan that had been an area of a lot of looting. And I don't know if this was before the looting or after. It was right around the time the looting was happening. There might have been looting after we left the area. I don't remember. We had been marching through, and we had just crossed from the Brooklyn Bridge into Manhattan. This was before the curfew had been put into effect. Night had just fallen on us, so it was dark outside, and the police had been doing what they'd been doing all along, which is dividing the protest. They would stop the protest and let a section move forward and then stop the march from continuing or redirect it down another street, basically to divide up the protest into smaller chunks. This is something that we have seen them do in the past. And then they would arrest chunks of the protests without the vast majority of the protests seeing the arrest happen. We've seen this in the past. This is something that they did during the Republican National Convention in 2004. It's something that they really started to perfect back then. It was super effective, super frightening. But we were marching through Manhattan in Soho, and the police came out of nowhere. There was no police around us. Then all of a sudden, there was a million cops, and they attacked us. They were firing rubber bullets at us. There was nothing happening. No one was doing anything violent. No one was smashing windows. No one was breaking property. We were just peacefully marching through the city at night, early night. It was like maybe 9 o'clock or something like that. 10 o'clock, maybe 10 o'clock at the latest. And the cops attacked us, beat the shit out of a bunch of people. Me and the people I was with Whitney from Days and Days and my friend Holly. And we ran down the street away from what sounded like rubber bullets. I didn't see them actually being shot at us. One of the people I was with said that they thought they were rubber bullets. They could have been concussion grenades. It could have been, I don't know what they were shooting at us. Loud bangs. I don't think it was a gun, but something, beanbags. I don't know. They were firing something at us and we were running. We got away. We ran down the street. We got away from the arrest that night. But it was intense and frightening and intimidating and just absolutely, totally violent on the behalf of the cops. That's my basic summation of the things that I saw at the protests. Purely violent on the side of the cops. Totally peaceful on our side. Energetic, exciting, diverse, an absolute vision of a world that I want to be part of every day. It was a beautiful sight. One of the most beautiful things I've ever seen is the protest during the days marching, taking the West Side Highway. Oh, I should say, so the marches never went in any way the cops expected them to. It was clear because we kept getting ahead of the police. So we would take the streets, we would walk through traffic. Traditionally, when there is a march, police block off streets so that cars don't get caught in the march. These marches, thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of people were marching through streets and taking streets. The cops couldn't control shit. So we were marching through streets and traffic was stuck all around us. A lot of the people who we marched past had gotten out of their cars and stood on their cars and started honking their horns or playing music loud and chanting with us. People were really supportive. We could have easily turned over those cars if people weren't. And we did march past some cars with some FOP stickers on them and people didn't overturn them. In fact, at one point we were marching over the Brooklyn Bridge and there was actually a Department of Corrections van. And I was in the middle of the march. No one had overturned it yet. I had wished that they had, but no one did. We were taking streets cops never expected us to. So we had there was a lot of people in the streets who never knew march was going to be happening and then were overwhelmed. And it was pretty exciting to see us take like the West Side Highway for 5 fucking hours. It was pretty exciting. I'm sure some of those people had places to get, but it was pretty exciting. I mean, we weren't inconsiderate, I think. I remember one time we were at a protest. Here's another example of how considerate the protests were. There was a nurse who had gotten off of work. She was heading her way back to New Jersey, and our protest had stopped in front of her car. So we had blocked her from getting onto the bridge, and she wanted to get home. She told that to us. We opened up a space for her to drive through. In fact, the person I was with gave her directions how to get home from where she was without going on the highway. So, you know, we were considerate about what people's needs were. And the fact that here's a nurse, she was working all day in a very dangerous conditions with COVID and everything. And she wanted to get home to her family. And we helped her do that, get through the protests. I do want to say about the looting and the smashing. We're in New York City. I did go through Soho. Personally, I'm fucking all for it. I'm so excited. People got some shit that they need or wanted or made some money off those things. These are multi-million dollar businesses. I don't think people were looting mom and pop shops, but even then, if you're a mom and pop shop in Manhattan, you're probably doing pretty fucking well. I didn't see any mom and pop shops had been smashed, but big businesses, everyone had boarded up all of their shit, which is also kind of exciting because they were scared of a little bit of class warfare. There was some looting. I am fully and totally in support of people stealing the shit that they want and need from a bunch of capitalists who are here to profit off of us. I'm fully in support of that. I think it's fucking wonderful, but I think that we should go back to the beginning of this episode and listen to how to change your perspective if you can't get behind that. But there was some of that. And I did actually get to see some people smashing cop cars at one point, which was absolutely one of the most wonderful times of my life. I was on 14th Street, near 14th Street, or one of the avenues near 14th Street, just below 14th Street in Manhattan. And it was nighttime, and I was on my bike, and I was alone at the protest, and I saw people, a group of young black men who had been smashing police vans up and down the street, and at one point they had stopped and just obliterated this van. I want to mention two things. One, awesome. It was fucking awesome to see people totally destroying a police van with no repercussions, no police in sight at that protest. I did not see, in what I observed, any white people participating. It was all young black folks. Trust me, I wanted to participate in that as much as anybody else. You know, I think these symbols of oppression deserve to be smashed. And I want to, you know, I felt the desire to be involved in that. I didn't participate despite my desires because I didn't want to take this to a place where some people didn't want it to go. So, again, organic, didn't impose myself in that situation. But I did get to at least watch it, which was exciting. I didn't take a video of it because I didn't want there to be a video of that. But it was fucking super exciting. And people were just, it was joyful. I mean, people were just cheering and chanting. There was other folks on bikes, clearly like from neighborhoods nearby, who were just kind of riding around being like, hell yeah, fuck that shit up. Protests were amazing. I can't think of other protests that were as long and diehard and energetic and diverse and youthful and inspiring that I have ever been to. And I've been to some huge fucking marches that have been awesome in the past, where other great things like I talked about had happened, but nothing quite like this. Just marches day in, day out, all day, all night, defying fucked up curfews, risking their health and well-being during a pandemic to make sure that people understood that they were against the police and demanded justice for George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. It was truly inspiring. It was truly, truly inspiring and a vision of the world we can get to. Okay, let's take another break, and we're going to end this podcast in a minute. Let's take another break. We're going to listen to a tune from another band here in New York City. This is the kind of hardcore that I really enjoy listening to. It's dark, it's heavy, and it is just fantastic. This band is called Ache, A-C-H-E, and let's listen to it. Here's Ache from New York City. Get down. That's the end of the episode. I want to say thank you so much to everybody who tuned in to this. I am so sorry that I have not done more episodes in the recent past. The quarantine fucked us up a bit. We have a bunch of episodes up on the website, dispatchesfromtheunderground.com. If you are stuck in quarantine, you are feeling isolated, and you need to sort of work through a process and a method to think through these things, please go listen to our series of shows working through that stuff. It's all free on our website, dispatchfromtheunderground.com. There's a subscription section you can go that'll take you through iTunes, or you can go on whatever device you listen to podcasts on. I'm sure we're on there. If there is anywhere that we are not up at, please holler back at us and we'll try to get us up on that as quickly as possible. I do want to say I'm sorry to everyone who expected more podcasts. Again, I was injured about a month and a half ago riding back from a huge protest that was taking place at Washington Square Park. We had marched from Harlem to Washington Square Park, and it was starting to rain. Absolutely massive protest. It might have been one of the biggest protests in New York City history, actually. Miles and miles of active, energetic marching. And I left from Washington Square Park and was riding my bike back to my home in Queens. At one point, I just hit a pothole. It was pouring rain outside, so the potholes were filled with water. I didn't see it. It was a huge pothole. I lost control of my bike in the middle of traffic. And I have been in enough bike accidents to know how to fall now. I'm better at falling. So the actual falling off the bike, I didn't go over the handlebars. I was able to maneuver myself to slide. And I skidded down the road, but sadly during my skid, which was not that bad, I ripped up my arm and my knee, but that was just skin lacerations and burnt skin. But while that was happening, a car then drove, didn't see me, wasn't paying attention, and sadly he drove over my leg and fucked my leg up, destroyed my bike, and put me out of commission for about a month. I am walking now. I want to, you know, it's not great. I haven't been able to run on my leg, so that's been a big bummer for me. I've been in a little bit of a dark place because of that, but I am walking again. I am able to get to the studio again, which is why I couldn't do a podcast for a while, because I couldn't physically get into the studio with my fucked up leg the way it is. So now I am able to, and I appreciate that you are listening to Dispatches. You haven't tuned us out, and I'm sorry I wasn't able to stick with my commitment to put up more episodes during the quarantine, but I did what I could, and we'll try to get some more episodes out in the very near future. I want to say thank you very dearly to all the people who have been supportive of me during my accident. Maddie, Matt, Orange, Kristen, Jay, Grace, Roger. Huge thanks to Roger. Huge thanks to my partner, Christine, and everybody else who's been checking in on me and reaching out to me. Huge thanks to my friends, Liz and Sarah, everybody who's just been looking after me through my accident and through my injury. I really appreciate so much your concern and kindness, your donations. People have donated to help me fix my bike. People who don't know, my bike is like an extension of me, and, I actually bought this very, very nice bike that I have and that was wrecked. I bought it off of Matt from Ake, who we played earlier in the episode. I bought it off. It used to be his wife's bike, who she had bought from some hipster in New York City who sold it to her for very cheap. And then they sold to me for very cheap. So it's a nicer bike than I will ever be able to get again. And it breaks my fucking heart that it was destroyed in this accident. And it's a bummer that it's gone. And, these friends I listed have sent me some money to try to make a dent in getting a bike. So I really appreciate that. It moves me so much. And everybody else who's reached out and helped me, thank you so much. I want to say thanks to Real Punk Radio at realpunkradio.com, who continues to air Dispatches from the Underground every Wednesday night at 11 p.m. I want to say thanks to Gabe, Casey, Lauren, G-Fresh, and Mark for their support of this show and continuing to give us thoughts and feedback and putting energy and effort into making the show a better thing. I don't think I would probably be doing this show if I didn't know there was people like that who supported what we do. Please, if you listen to Dispatches, continue to share this on social media. We have no advertising budget. So if you think we are valuable asset to shifting perspectives out there, please share this in social media, share this in whatever way you use media. And if you are in a position to be donating, there is a donation section on the Dispatches from the Underground website, dispatchesfromtheunderground.com. You can leave a donation there. We really appreciate anyone who's doing that. We know times are tough. And for those of you who do think Dispatches is valuable in your life, please think about giving a $5 monthly donation or $20 a year or every $10 here and there when you have the money. It means a lot to us. It means a ton to me to know that people are willing to sacrifice a little something monetarily or whatever else to see this podcast happen, because I pour so much of my heart and soul into this podcast, and to know that other people care about it in any way means a ton. If you aren't able to do that, I understand. Please share it. Please let people know you listen to it. There is also a merch section where there is merch from various bands that I'm in, All Torn Up and Cop Out and Skullcaster and some other things. There's a merch section on the website, dispatchingtheunderground.com. That money is also super helpful and helps us, especially when we've had so many tours canceled and so we can't be out there making money, making music. So if you are in a position and don't want to donate but want to get something in return for your money, you can get something from the merch section. But either way, the podcast will continue to be free. The most important thing to us is that people are consuming conscious and empowering media, that people are thinking different perspectives and thinking more critically about the people that they want to be and the world they want to bring into being. And that's what this podcast is dedicated to. That's why we make it, and that's why we can continue to make it until we can't make it anymore. I said earlier in the episode, we're going to be talking here at the end about what we're going to be doing in the very near future and what people should be doing. I want to encourage everybody, if they are in a position, if they're not stuck in a quarantine, please use these protests as a moment to be organizing some collectives. A collective just means that you're getting together with other people that you meet at these protests, or people who are punks, or people who share some of your values. They don't have to share all of your ideas. We actually think it would be better if they didn't share all of your ideas, but rather there is some contrast and disagreement. You're getting together and you're talking about racial justice, and you're talking about police and punks and theory, because unless we transform our ideology, unless we transform ourselves in our ideas from where they were before this protest started to what we want them to become, we aren't really going to see change. So it's important that we collectively get together with other folks and work through different writings and different texts and different thoughts and questions that we have, or different experiences that we've lived through, whatever. Just, it's important that we talk about these things and reflect on them as we are moving. Don't stop moving. Don't stop going to protests or organizing shows or making art or whatever. Don't stop doing those things, but don't just do those things also. Hopefully, people are taking this moment to organize a little bit and get together some collectives that they could talk to people about and transform each other and your own ideas. We're going to be doing more of that in New York City. I haven't done that in a while here, and I feel really bad about it. And I'm going to try to do it more and more, because without it, I don't think we can actually change anything. And appreciate people's differences. Don't just try to change them to be more like you, but appreciate their perspectives. I know you hate that word already, but appreciate where they're coming from and their thoughts as well. Anyway, that's what people should be doing right now. People should be organizing, not just organizing protests, but organizing spaces for people to be conscious and critical about reflecting on their experiences and ideas and transforming them with theory, with thoughts, and with reading, and with text, and with work. In the next episode, we're going to be talking about some other things related to this. We're going to be talking about this question of, quote, how we do better, because I know a lot of liberals have been sort of put on their heels in this situation, and they want to know how they can do better. But what I like that a lot of people are talking about when they say that is, how do we look like we're doing better? And it's encouraging to see so many corporations jump on the Black Lives Matter bandwagon. I'm excited about that. That's wonderful. That's what we want. But it only matters if the CEOs and the companies are taking time to reflect why they weren't here in the first fucking place, what took them so long to get here, and what they were thinking of that changed. What changed, right? What changed in their outlook that all of a sudden now they support Black Lives Matter, or now they realize that cops are unjust? What changed, and how can we make sure that this isn't just some performative piece that people are expressing in this moment to look good or to look appropriate, and how can we make sure that it goes down deep into the core of who they are. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to be talking about white supremacy versus white privilege, what those things mean, sort of the question of like whether one of those terms is like the passive vector, thinking about racism is sort of like a in the COVID virus mentality. We're going to do, I'm going to be giving a little bit of self-criticism from a radical left-wing perspective of things that I've done in the past in relationship to police brutality. I want to talk a little bit about that as well, because I think everybody has room for growth, even people who've been working on these issues for decades, as I have. I think that there's places for me to grow and to talk about as well. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk about the role of culture as indicators or signifiers for change, the role of movies like Black Panther and Get Out in relationship to this. And I want to talk also, I'm not sure how we're going to get into this, but in the future, I'd like to talk about the relationship between this and a movement like Me Too, or this wave of feminism that has happened in the last few years as well, and whether these movements are in conflict, or they're in conjunction, or they're leading toward people seeing the unity of all these injustices and capitalism at the root. I just I think it's important for us to be talking about these as well. Anyway, that's some of the stuff we're going to be talking about in episodes to come. And I want to say thank you to everybody who listened to this entire podcast, because I know it was kind of long, but hopefully there was a lot of stuff to dig into and get down with. And hopefully your perspective is a little broader and a little more clear, whether or not you agree with me or not at the end of this episode. So thank you all very much, and we'll see you all very soon. Till then, get down.